From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A somewhat discordant opening to the Republican National Convention in Cleveland Monday. That was the sound of several hundred anti-Trump delegates at the convention seeking to change the convention rules in order to register votes against his candidacy. Following the vote, in which they were badly defeated, some walked out of the convention in protest. From the floor of the convention, it was clear that Trump has enormous support among the assembled delegates. Trump is expected to be officially nominated as the candidate of the Republican Party Thursday. Some senior Republican figures refused to take part in the event. Press TV's Connie Shfatima spoke with analyst James Jodris about the attempt by the anti-Trump delegates to block his candidacy.
What we saw was a minority at the convention that the chair was playing hardball with, because they represent the establishment of the party that has been beaten by Trump's populist insurgency, and they don't like it. And these are some of the same people that throughout the primaries played hardball in the state conventions, stole delegates from Trump by using the rules. Now they're getting a taste of their own medicine. They don't like it, but frankly, they don't represent very much. These are primarily the establishment neoconservative wing of the party. They're very upset that a guy that is a nationalist, that does not reflect their views, is the nominee of the party.
But Mr. Jodras, of course, how is this going to translate in the next few months, as Trump will then be taking on Hillary Clinton directly? Would the lack of backing from the heavyweights in the GOP not hurt his cause?
These heavyweights don't really represent much of anybody. As I say, these are the dying neoconservative wing of the party. They're used to having their own way. Look, we're going to have a very stark choice here in the fall. We have Hillary Clinton, who never met a war she didn't like. Her shadow defense secretary, Michel Flournoy, just called for military intervention in Syria to topple Assad. The American people are not going to have this. At the convention, the neocons wanted to put in a plank to arm Ukraine, and the Trump people insisted on taking that out. An America First policy is one that will resonate with the American people, because they're tired of this invade the world mentality that has dominated both parties.
The failed challenge by some members of the Republican Party elite came despite the fact that Trump won the primaries overwhelmingly against the nearest competitor. That was not the case in the Democratic primaries, where Bernie Sanders pulled a close second behind Hillary Clinton and, in fact, according to exit polls, actually beat her. Bob Fitrakis is an Ohio lawyer based in Columbus who is currently in Cleveland for the convention. He represents a plaintiff that's suing Edison Media Research, Inc., a New Jersey corporation that conducted exit polls in Ohio, in Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, New Hampshire, Vermont, Virginia, South Carolina, Wisconsin, New York, Indiana, Florida, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina, Connecticut, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Nebraska, and West Virginia during this year's presidential primary elections. The lawsuit details that the exit polls varied dramatically with the vote that was published officially on primary day. In many cases, in 12 states in particular, it exceeded the level that the U.S. State Department uses to measure whether or not an election elsewhere was free and fair. The lawsuit details the fact that after seeing the official tally in each case, Edison Media Research modified its exit poll so that it conformed to the official tally. After looking to see if the process was transparent in order to measure the accuracy of the revisions, they were rebuffed and brought the lawsuit. We spoke with Bob Fitrakis about that via Skype from Cleveland Saturday. Bob Fitrakis, very interesting lawsuit. Let's hear a description.
Well, really, we're suing Edison Research Group, arguing that they're working in collaboration or colluding with the secretaries of state in various states to adjust the polls so we don't get an accurate total for who really won the election.
Yeah, it seems that apparently in a number of states, the exit polls that they were conducting with the full assistance of the state authorities, permission to be near the polling stations and all of that, that the exit polls showed one thing at one time, and then after the official count came out, they were revised. And what you're looking for is some transparency, and they're refusing it, right?
Right. We'd really like to see how the exit polls, which are the international gold standards for detecting election fraud, why this company or how it is adjusting them and simply assuming that the official vote total is correct as opposed to their samples. And again, normally you could say that the official vote total would be correct if they were actually transparent and verifiable. But since partisan for-profit corporations using proprietary software count our votes and they don't meet any minimum standard of transparency, by collaborating like this, by assuming a non-transparent voting system, which has been privatized, is accurate, essentially, you don't know. Either these people are, to some extent, done the most incompetent exit pollers and social scientists on Earth, or someone is involved in doctoring and defrauding our election.
Yeah, let me frame this for listeners a little bit. Before we had all these black box voting machines, you could physically verify, if it were necessary, as it became necessary, who voted for whom, but each ballot, who was selected on those ballots. You had a piece of paper, whether it was a roll or a physical ballot, that could be examined and audited and recounted against whatever automatic mechanism was used for tallying. And with these machines, you don't. You, as you put it last time we spoke, it's like a push and pray. So the problem now is that on the other end of it, you've had exit polling and the results, known to people, and then a substantial vector between what the exit polls showed at the beginning and the count, and then a revision of the exit polls, and no transparency about how that happens at all for any of it.
Yeah, now we'd really like to look at their methodology, their samples. We'd like them to explain how they were 36 percentage points off in Arizona, 10 percentage points off in Ohio. Is that in 12 states, the results are so improbable, if those states were nation states, the world community would not recognize them as valid elections.
Yeah, I mean, this is a science. You've said that the U.S. State Department uses a 5% vector as the standard as to whether or not to certify an election.
Yeah, the U.S. State Department and the Agency on International Development, I mean, they write books and pamphlets on this stuff, using the exit polls as the best single detector of fraud.
If one were looking to, for a remedy in terms of how the primaries get actualized at the conventions, of course, you'd have to reach into the delicate certification process that goes on at the conventions. And in particular, we're talking here primarily about Clinton and Sanders and a condition where the exit polls would have show that Sanders should have had enough delegates to win on a first ballot victory, and instead he doesn't and is, making political statements of concession right now. What you're looking for in terms of this process would be evidence for something that would reach into the convention. How would that work?
Well, the convention itself appears, based on the exit polls, to be nominating the wrong person. And more than that, my preference is that there should be a criminal investigation. You know, I'm not accusing the Clinton campaign of, you know, systematically stealing elections. But if you look at the stripping of the voter rolls, which is also done with computerized poll books and electronic computerized control of the voter databases, is somebody, I don't know who it is, what party, what motive, is clearly stealing votes, repressing Sanders voters, and then in at least 12 of these states, flipping votes as needed. So, you know, I would prefer a criminal investigation. I think there should be a massive floor fight. My suit is probably a little too late that may impact the November election in terms of what can and can't be done. But there should be a major floor fight over the question of democracy and how somebody gets nominated that's clearly there by fraud.
You know, it seems that the rules, of course, would be looking to the official vote count as being the final arbiter of how someone gets seated there, along with the individual criteria for each of the delegates. But the certified vote count, of course, places Clinton ahead of Sanders, although not in a position for a first ballot victory without the so-called superdelegates. With a floor fight, and with a full vetting of this chicanery in front of the convention, do you think there's any chance that it could impact the outcome of what happens in Philadelphia?
Well, it could, but it really depends upon the willingness of the Sanders people to push the extremes, and also what is logical, that they're entitled to far more delegates than they were granted. So with their candidate endorsing Clinton, that could be problematic. But if people were just concerned, not with an individual candidate, but the principle of representation and democracy, they've got more than enough evidence to reassign delegates and credential them. My understanding, though, the exact opposite is going on. The Clinton people that are often more veteran party activists and, you know, deal with the boards of elections and registrars are, in fact, decredentialing Sanders people. So instead of getting the delegates he deserves to be nominated, he's getting less than probably he won in a crooked vote count.
And finally, you know, going forward, if the litigation is able to uncover this fraud and show some connection between Clinton's campaign and, you know, the illegal activity that produced this result, do you think that should or would have an impact on the outcome of the election?
I think if we show, you know, fraudulent behavior in any way, link it to the Clinton campaign, then she should probably resign and Sanders should be nominated. And I think in all likelihood, I can't understand, and I don't know what level it would be at, but I can't understand how she is not aware that she is only there because of the most flagrant stripping of the voter rolls, deregistering Sanders votes. At such a high level, it's really in many states, Arizona, Alabama, California, New York, it's a coup d'etat. She's got to be aware that somebody is gaming and manipulating the system in an illegal way. And if that's tied to her campaign, I can't see with the email and some of the other problems how she can remain a viable candidate.
And just for a final point, question, the superdelegates are mostly elected officials and other senior government officials that are affiliated with the party. Does that include the heads of the Board of Elections in many of these states?
Oh, no, absolutely. Because, for example, in Ohio, in my county, Franklin County, the Board of Election director, the executive director, was also for a long period of time the chair of the party. Usually each of the major parties get to nominate, in our state, the director and the assistant director, depending on whether they won that county or not. And by the way, our chair of the Board of Election in Franklin County, where Columbus is in Ohio, was just arrested, indicted for signing off on a ghost employee at the Board of Election. So these are the type of people that are controlling the vote.
David Cobb is a lawyer from Texas who was the 2004 Green Party candidate for president. We spoke with him from Cleveland via Skype Saturday. What's the view like from where you are?
Well, let me tell you, it's a hyper-militarized, highly corporatized city. There is no doubt that we are living in corporate-occupied territory here in Cleveland, Don. And I'm here representing Move to Amend, a multiracial, multi-ethnic coalition of groups and individuals who are building a mass movement to abolish the illegitimate court-created concept of corporate constitutional rights and get money out of elections. And one of the things that's very interesting is watching how people across the political spectrum, liberals, conservatives, moderates alike, are reacting to how corporatized this political convention is and the disgust they have with the wealthy and powerful here. It's a very interesting phenomenon, Don.
And, you know, the city that you're in now, as militarized as it is, used to be run by Dennis Kucinich, didn't it?
That's right. Dennis was the boy mayor, and he got his start in his 20s as a city council member and then mayor. Thanks to Dennis Kucinich, the city of Cleveland actually was able to have publicly controlled electrical power generation and distribution. Now, however, it is controlled by corporate Democrats. So it's a different city than it once was.
And they shoot like young children that are playing outside, like three seconds after they shoot young children,
specifically young black children. Absolutely. I mean, there is a horrible, horrible legacy here. However, I can also tell you there is a level of resistance that I'm encountering. For example, today, all day, I participated, along with many others, in a People's Convention for Justice and Peace. And this brought together people who were working on environmental activism, social justice, racial justice, economic justice issues, creating a highly participatory process by which people are coming together to draft platform planks to say we reject both the Democratic and Republican Party processes and platforms and are making a people's platform. And I got to tell you, Don, that Pacifica listeners would be very impressed by that people's platform process.
Why don't you give us a couple of the kernels that are sort of being floated there?
Well, for example, political justice. There is a call for an entire new constitutional framework because the current constitution is a property rights document. And instead, we need a new legal system that protects and enshrines human rights and the rights of Mother Earth and the rights of nature. There is a call to abolish corporate constitutional rights. There is a call to have access to the ballot and to the debate process for all political parties and independent candidates. There is a call for full publicly funded elections. There is a call for instant runoff voting and proportional representation. There is a call to end felony disenfranchisement because of the racist nature of both our criminal justice system and elections. What I just described to you, Don, in a thumbnail sketch is one of the planks, the political justice plank, that would actually take seriously the idea that the United States of America is supposed to be a democratic republic. If that were true, then our elections should actually be democratic. So that platform process. It took all day for activists and social change agents coming together to grapple together, but that participatory process came forward with a series of demands that we are now going to be taking into the electoral process. In other words, we're no longer trying to lobby elected officials, no longer chasing after candidates. Now we're actually building our own set of demands, taking it to them, and telling candidates for office and elected officials, from now on, you have to respond to us. We're not responding to you anymore.
Along those lines, one of the things that is obviously different this year, here in the United States and really across the world. I mean, people have been in the street in France, for example, for many months. You saw Brexit, you see all these things happening all over the world. But here in the United States, you've had the working class basically on its feet, stumbling, trying to find its way in the dark, perhaps, but represented fully in the electoral process behind both Trump and Sanders. And a response from the elites to tamp it down everywhere they can. A unity of the Republican and Democratic establishment behind Clinton, Sanders being forced to, essentially endorse Clinton and go hat in hand in order to have a place at the podium at the Democratic convention, despite exit polls saying he should have actually had a first ballot victory. There are people that are looking at the way the Greens dealt with what happened to Ralph Nader in 2000 and really what actually happened in the year 2000 and saying that the safe state strategy in 2004 may have been appropriate then, but perhaps there should be an unsafe state strategy now where the Greens and progressives target Hillary Clinton in swing states. What are your thoughts on that? Because you were the presidential candidate.
Well, first of all, I want to say, Don, as the 2004 candidate, I actually ran hard and ran everywhere.
I know you did. I was talking to you. I know you did.
States, but I just want to correct it, that I ran hard and ran everywhere. In fact, evidence of that is that I campaigned in Florida, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin,
yep,
and in Ohio, where I am physically right now. Yep. And remember, especially in Ohio, that I was on the ballot and was able to file a recount in Ohio. And if not for the Green Party, George Bush would have not only stolen an election, but nobody would have known it.
That's
at
right.
least because the Green Party was on the ballot, we were able to fight back and build an election integrity movement. Now, let me circle back
this.
To
yeah,
this
yeah,
election
yeah,
cycle
yeah, yeah.
and tell you this. I believe that it is an opportunity for a growth spurt for both the Green Party and the Libertarian Party like we have never seen before. What we know is, and you are correct, that both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders both represent insurgent campaigns within the existing political party structure. The leadership of both of those parties did everything they could to undermine, delegitimize, and squash and suppress those insurgent candidates. Of course, Trump ultimately prevailed. Bernie Sanders almost did. In fact, I think that it's fair to say that Bernie Sanders had the Democratic Party's nomination stolen from him by a combination of party hacks and the corporate media. But at the end of the day, both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump represent something, a profound dissatisfaction with politics as usual. And that is an example of how the two-party system is beginning to crack before our eyes, Don. You and I have had this conversation before. The two-party system is not going to be able to survive, and I think that it's coming to its end. Because here's the second point I want to make about this, and that is that as we watch Hillary Clinton, the corporatist plutocrat that she is, I actually think she may be the last gasp, because I think that the various movements that exist in this country, and I mean Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter,
yep,
Move to Amend,
yep,
the climate justice movement, the racial justice movement broadly, the calls to abolish the prison industrial complex. I could go down the list of all these movements that you know, because you're a historian and you follow these things, Don. What you know is that these things are more acute. There are more people on the move. There are more people becoming conscious and in motion than you and I have ever seen in our lifetime. Here's the kicker. Those movements cannot be contained and controlled within the existing Democratic Party. At the end of the day, those movements are either going to destroy transform the Democratic Party as it exists, or they're going to destroy it. I suspect it's the latter, because I don't think that the Wall Street corporatists are going to let it go. And I think that we are maybe watching the last gasp during this election cycle. And that's the reason I believe that the Green Party's role ought to be not only to welcome Sanders supporters, but to also articulate a red, green, black view of how electoral politics, red for social justice and the great proud tradition of organized labor and socialism, green for deep ecology and the new vision that the Green Party has, and black unapologetically to describe our opposition to white supremacy and our to promote and lift up the need for black and brown liberation. And the Green Party should be the electoral arm of all of these movements.
Our regular political commentator, Professor Anthony Montero, spoke with Black Agenda Report's Glenn Ford about a CBS New York Times poll that came out late last week.
The most dramatic thing happening in terms of public attitudes is that 67%, according to the New York Times CBS poll this week, 67% of voters do not trust Hillary Clinton. Only 28% of them trust her. And this is a decline in her trustworthiness from the month before, from June. She declined 5%. So she's losing ground. And I think it will continue. They could spend $10 billion on advertisement. I don't think they will ever be able to convince the American voters, including black voters, that Hillary Clinton is trustworthy and is anything other than a person who breaks the law, but because she is a part of the elite and because of their connections, she can get away with it. And people don't like that. I think that the Democrats are going to have to decide when they come here to Philadelphia whether they stick with her as their candidate, because I think she cannot win against Trump. Or if she wins, it will be by such a narrow margin that it will leave most people thinking that perhaps they stole it. This is huge. I don't know how they go forward with her. And if they do go forward with her and she wins, I don't know how they govern with her. It's a crisis at a level that we have never experienced, except right before the Civil War.
What do you mean by crisis of legitimacy?
I'm using it in the way that political scientists have used it over the years. And when they talk about a crisis of legitimacy, they mean, in effect, that the people do not trust their government. The people do not see the government as their government and reject it. They refuse to be governed in the ways that they have been governed. It could also, in a transitionary moment, be manifested in the mobilization and organization of people to govern themselves in their local areas. Let me give you one example. The police. Across the country, people are calling for community control of police, and in some instances are talking about communities policing themselves. This is a form of not just community control, but alternative political power. You could take the same thing, for example, with education, with the collapse of public education and the charterization of public education. People are saying the right to self-determination and the right to sovereignty over education means that they have to take things into their own hands. Another example, the formation throughout the country of what back in the days we used to call survival programs, community gardens, consumer cooperatives, different types of economic activity to provide the needs of the people. These all represent alternative centers of power in a moment when the traditional government and political system is seen as illegitimate.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar. Thanks for listening.